Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
You told me you were leaving. I asked you if you wanted your coat, or you're gonna leave it behind. You didn't give a reason, you didn't say a word, you just kept staring at your coat. Your clothes felt unfamiliar. You looked the same, but everything had changed, and it wasn't the light. Won't you tell me something to make me feel alright? Starlight and Campbell. The Coat. That's the seventh song and track two from the second side from Starlight One, which is our third studio album set for release on the 1st of September and available to pre-order now from starlight-campbell.com.
So that is a track that you wrote. There's actually three on the album that you wrote yourself. Mm-hmm. And because unusually, we normally write everything between us, don't we?
We do.
But in this case, we didn't. So we, we actually had a little bit of an Emerson, Lake and Palmer moment in Works where they all did one side and it was That, of course, was a bombastic move, but hopefully this isn't too much of a bombastic move. But that song has been around for quite a long time, and, you know, because we first did it in, or you wrote it right back in Valencia, didn't you? A long, long time ago.
Yeah, I wrote it for my mum because she had early onset Alzheimer's when I was in my early 20s. It was really quite a horrible time in my life, really, because my dad died suddenly of a heart attack when I was 24. Then within a couple of months, mum was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And so I'd lost them both because one person had died and the other one was physically still there but was being stolen right in front of my eyes, and there's nothing I could do about it. So for me, the coat was... and then when we were getting married, and I wrote this for mum because it felt like I wanted to talk to her, because, you know, you're strong, you look after your parents, don't you? And you make sure, you know, that they're looked after. And it took me a couple of years to really kind of miss her, because I was so kept on thinking about her, I forgot to, you know, mourn in a way, you know? And so in a way, this was a lovely tribute to... Because I feel that there's so many people now who know somebody who's got Alzheimer's. It just feels like everyone will know what that feels like. And it's... It's like you don't know where they are and you don't know how to help them, you know, and it's like, and it's so, but it is written from that perspective of a daughter, of a child, you know, but just completely madly in love. And so I fell in love with my mum all again, because you had to, you know, she whoever she was, you just, do you know what the best thing did? I used to sing to her, and she used to, when she stopped speaking, she'd sing. Jump down, turn around, pick a bale of cotton. Jump down, turn around, pick a bale. And she'd go, oh, Lordy, pick a bale of cotton. Seriously, she wouldn't be able to speak, but she'd sing with me. I'd play my music for my band Megiddo, and I'd say, who's that, Mum? And she said, it's you. You know, when she, just before she stopped speaking. But she knew music, and the gift of music's beautiful. And so, you know, Well, this is such a positive love song as well, and this is really for everyone who knows anyone who's got this evil disease, you know, and you mustn't let it steal your joy, you mustn't let it steal your heart, and you must be strong and cry it out and celebrate the people in your life, you know, keep them with you. And it's just love. It's just love.
Well, we've tackled quite a lot of difficult subjects on this record, haven't we? I mean, there's, you know, there's a cornucopia of emotions and human conditions and global and, you know, theological arguments. There's lots and lots of stuff that we cover on this record. And we're speaking yesterday to the lovely Ross Muir.
Yeah.
From Fabrications HQ, did a great review. It was just published today. And you know, we were talking to him in depth, and he really got it. He really did. He's a learned man. He's an architect, and he reads a lot, you know. And he got the lyrics. He got what we were trying to get across, because, you know, some of them are obvious. Some of them are not immediately obvious. You know, this is, I wouldn't say it's obvious, but it's obviously a love song. And then when you get into it, you know, you really discover. And it's a beautiful song. I just want to talk about the reimagination of it, because originally you wrote it on piano, because you write a lot of stuff on piano, don't you?
I do, yeah.
And when we came to do this, we were gonna try and find a grand piano, because with this, if you're going to do a piano, it's got to be grand. You can't use our upright. We've got an upright here, which is cool, you know, Lena Badonna and all that sort of stuff.
A bit honky-tonk,
you know,
it?
A bit slightly honky-tonk. It sounds great, you know, and we've used it an awful lot, but it wouldn't fit on here. So we're looking for a grand piano, and it was going to be expensive for us to do it. Of course, that isn't a consideration with us, really, because if we have to do it, we do it. But we just thought, well, why don't we try it a different way? Rather than having to drive up to Porto or driving to Lisbon to actually record the grand piano. And you were playing the Waldorf SVTC, which is it's like a vocoder, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you started playing it, and you just went, oh, 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 oh,
oh. Into the mic, yeah.
And it was, I thought, wow, that sounds absolutely great. And then I remember saying, well, why don't we stick that bit behind the coat? And all of a sudden, it sort of happened. But the impressive thing about this. And all the synthesizers that we've done on the album, apart from the obvious sequence stuff, which you can hear, it's arpeggiated, or that, or whatever, we've played in ourselves live. We haven't actually quantized them, which means correct them in terms of time electronically. Yeah. And here, what you were doing is that you were actually playing along with the click track, because we have a click going dick, 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 to actually to keep the time for, because Ugu wasn't here when we did this for the drums. And you played along with it, and it's perfectly imperfect, and because it's you singing into it or just going each note is slightly different in volume, it's slightly different in timing.
Like a breath, though. It's like a heartbeat. That's why. And I remember just saying, I felt like I wanted to change it up. I actually didn't want to do the grand piano. It felt like, you know, with the way that Starlight One was going. And as you listen through the album in sequence, you can see that by the time it was like, if we're going to do this song, I wanted to do something fresh with it. And look at it again, because the sentiment and the relationship hasn't changed. And this isn't something that will change, but the way that I can express it can. It's like a fresh, I don't know, putting lemon on it or something. It just felt like it needed to be done. And I didn't know why, but I just decided there and then. I remember doing it. But it's because the other thing is as well, it's like with this album as well, it's you got to serve the song. You might have written it and it might be a personal story, but it's what does the song need? What does this song need to actually really fly like a kite in the wind? You know, what does it need? So that was really where the primary inspiration for that really was like,
well, okay. The bass part, I mean, because the bass part is a great part on this. I really love it. And you know, it's such a great sound, because you usually might little jazz bass with flatman strings on it. It's really cool. And you know, with that, it comes in real deep and low and beautiful and rich.
Smooth.
And then We have that, the Prophet 5, with those big chords. And I was really inspired just to cut them off, because if you listen to it and listen to the Moog guitar, that's that thing going, like that funny wah sound. They just stop.
Yeah.
And my thought was, when we just cut it off quite fiercely, we didn't fade it, we just gone bang like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
It's like the end of a life, or an end of an era or end of a thing. And what it does, I think it accentuated your vocal. I just loved it anyway. I love playing this. I love the song. It's amazing.
I'm just
know?
So relieved that it's born, if you know what I mean, because now it belongs to everyone who hears it, really. And you can have that for your song, for whoever it is, you know, send it to a friend if you know somebody, just because it's all about... I remember interviewing when I was doing radio before, and I interviewed some people from the Alzheimer's Society, and it was just like, and I saw the pain in their eyes. I thought, I don't want it to get me like that. You can't have two people. You might have the victim, as it were, that you're, you know, the disease, but you're not getting me. You're not getting me. You're not stealing my joy. You're not stealing my heart. And this song is a song of hope and of love.
All this talk of getting old, it's getting me down, my love, like a cat in a bag waiting to drown. This time I'm coming down, and I hope you're thinking of me. She laid down on your side. Now the trucks don't work, they just make you worse. But I know I'll see your face again. Now the trucks don't work, they just make you worse. But I know I'll see your face again. But I know I'm on the losing. street is out past down my old street. And if you wanna show, then just let me know and I'll sing in your ear again. Now the trucks don't work, they just make you worse, but I know I'll see your face again. This baby, ooh, if heaven falls, I'm coming to just like you say.
Verve, The Drugs Don't Work, the second single from their third album, Urban Hymns, released as a single on September the 1st, 1997, on Hut Records. The somber nature of this song unintentionally captured the spirit of the nation as it was released the day after Princess Diana died.
Mm.
I remember all that, and this album was one of those that really got me. It was absolutely beautiful. And the reason why we're playing this today is that this show is all about Lancashire, continuing with our theme of where we're playing on tour. We're playing at Blacko, at Hamish's in Manchester, which is near Burnley, if you don't know where it is, a tiny village, on the 13th of October on our tour. So we're looking forward to that. It's going to be an acoustic performance, or a semi-acoustic performance anyway. And Richard Ashcroft is from Wigan, which technically is Greater Manchester, but I think there's an awful lot, as we'll hear
that
a little,
way, love, that
yeah,
way.
you know, that people from Wigan think they're in Lancashire, not in Greater Manchester. I think they're very fierce about that. Pie eaters, they're known as. They have really? Pie butties. Yeah, because what they get is you get two pieces of, well, they're like a muffin. I don't know how you describe them, because we're talking worldwide terminology. Even in England, you can't decide. But it's like a roll. like a bread. Flat roll, bread roll, yeah, and they put pie in between it. So they put like a meat set pie in the bread roll and eat the whole thing.
And the pie's got this thick sort of pastry.
Crust. Oh, yeah, yeah, heart attack material. But that's Wigan anyway. But Richard Ashcroft from Wigan, and the very troublesome but extremely talented Nick McCabe on guitar. Falling out with Richard Ashcroft all the time. They split up, reformed. But great guitar player. And inspired by the Smiths and Johnny Marr's guitar.
Yeah, I was watching a video of an interview with Richard Ashcroft earlier this afternoon, and he was saying that, you know, what happened with them, which is really good, is that they were on the dole for a while, and it gave them some space to write. So they weren't working, but they were working on their music. And then when they did get a record deal, and when they signed to Hut Records, they didn't make them put a single out straight away. They gave them like a 6-month development time just to find their feet. And he said, you know, it took, they needed to get their heads around the fact that they'd actually got a deal, you know, because it was a bit like, a bit bonkers for them, really. Because at the time, he was saying like the Manchester music scene was already gone. It was like tumbleweed.
I remember.
In the city. And yeah, I remember too. And it was like, so I think it just took them a little while so that they could start writing. And then he said he started to find out that he kind of turned into a bit of an arranger. And I think his skills, he said, you know, he'd write, guess how, now, you know, with your so Simon wrote, you wrote an article on Vibes about collating information when you're writing, curating songs,
right,
and creative ideas.
A couple of weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, which is on our Substack, vibes-dot. What is
Starlight it? Starlight-Campbell.com.
That's right. Yeah, well done. Well, anyway, so the way that he used to write was he used to write into a dictaphone.
Yeah.
So that's his way of when he used to write his creative ideas.
A little tape. I used to
a little tape. Yeah.
I talk about it in that blog anyway, if you want to read the article.
Yeah, but it's interesting, though, because it's like you get all these ideas and then how do you find them again, you know? Because when it flows. That's what he said. He said, like, these doors open and just all this music was flowing. It's like, and how do you create it? Anyway, just sidetracked. So that's Richard Ashcroft. Mm.
One of the greatest, you know, sort of songwriters of the area, really. I mean, Manchester and Lancashire have had some brilliant, you know, artists and musicians, Cheshire and all that area. Liverpool, of course, because not a lot of people know that Liverpool's only about 26 miles away from Manchester. It's not very far at all, you know.
No, so I used to commute from Manchester to Liverpool to work for like nearly 2 years.
So between Manchester and Liverpool, you know, there's been an awful lot of music come out of that area.
Isn't it interesting as well, though? The thing that gets me is I still sometimes can't get over the fact that you've got a bloke singing so gently. I know, you know, it's funny, though, because, like, they're lads, you know, they were treble. He said they were real, like, arrogant and, like, they wouldn't mime because they couldn't mime on TV shows, and just said he just had a big ego, and he said he was a pain in the ass to work with. And that you've got these guys who are like kind of pain in the asses singing like really kind of gentle, broken songs about the fact that, you know, he's taking drugs and that it don't make him feel better than make him feel worse.
Yeah, and of course, Bittersweet Symphony, which of course they didn't get a penny for because the Rolling Stones got it all because of that. Yeah, that. Anyway.
Haven't they sorted that now? Have they given?
I think, I don't know. I can't remember now, but at the time it was outrageous, you know. But this was produced by The Verve, Youth, they were producing, Chris Potter, who's worked a lot with The Verve, and of course recorded recorded at Olympic Studio, which is one of our favourite studios in the whole world. Sadly closed now. But it's absolutely brilliant. I just love this record. And it's one of those records that, and his voice is dead in my range. So if you get me drunk one night, right, I will sing this because I love singing this song. So I've really got a good grasp of the, because it's not too high, it's not too low, and it's sort of perfect for my vocal range. So they are, but I have to be drunk first.
It's been 7 hours and 15 days since you took your love away. I go out every night and sleep all day since you took your love away.
since you've been gone, I can do whatever I want. I can see whomever I choose. I can eat my dinner in a fancy restaurant, but nothing, I said nothing can.
Sinead O'Connor, Nothing Compares to You. Released on January the 8th, 1990 on Chrysalis Records. It's a song that defined her career, but it wasn't the only one. She was so much more than this song, but this one in particular became a worldwide hit, topping the charts all over the world from Ireland, Denmark, Canada, Mexico, Netherlands, Norway, Sweden, UK, United States. Spent 4 weeks at the top of the Billboard Hot 100, number one in the Billboard Alternative Song Charts. You get the drift. It just was mad. Madly, wonderfully, beautifully successful. Everybody knows the words to this song. Everyone ever, you know, born around that time, if you're over four, will know this song.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Remarkable track, written by Prince, of course.
Yeah.
Sinead produced it along with Nellie Hooper. Interestingly, on the album, Carl Wallinger's on there as an arranger who was in World Party, of course. And they just popped
up.
Oh,
really? I saw them in Manchester, actually.
Yeah, and but she basically played everything. And it's very, very easy for us to, you know, wax lyrical about Sinead. Kind of, in all honesty, I don't have any of her albums. I don't have... I know this track, but that's it. I saw her once.
Right.
At the Electric Picnic. It was in Dublin.
Right.
Yeah. And she came on stage, she looked like an accountant, and I just didn't get it, you know. But a lot of people didn't get it. The music industry didn't get it. And Morrissey, and, you know, I don't like his politics. I don't like what he has to say these days, but he's a great lyricist, and he did a vituperative open letter. Which I would urge you to look up, Morrissey from the Smiths, of course, about the music business, and also about all the stars that have worked or are all saying, oh, God, wasn't she great, but nobody supported her when she was alive. And the only person that I know that worked with her that has not said diddly squat is my favourite producer of all time, and that's Daniel Lanois.
Of course.
And Lanois said she was wonderful. He loved her. He worked with her on a number of occasions. And I've just looked on his Instagram now, and even now he's not said anything.
No. Do you know what's really lovely, though? Because they were filming her when Dan was in the room with Sinead, and that was that black and white footage, wasn't it? And she was so sweet. She was just, like, working through her song and stuff and kind of giggled. But so, yeah, we're playing the song because sadly she's dead. She died at age 56, just moved to London. And you know, when you say the music industry doesn't get her, and you know, she said in this interview, because I tried to get to understand her a bit this afternoon, she said she was more of a protest singer. Mm. And what happened is, like, when her manager at the time told her, look, this is the song for you, with Nothing Compares to You, mm-hmm. and she recorded it, the record execs wanted her to sort of grow her hair and put on short skirts and high heels. And she went back to her manager and said, you know, this isn't me. He said, go and shave your hair off. So she did. She went across the road to a Greek barber's. And apparently the young lad was trying to ring his dad or somebody just to say, you know, pleading with her not to do it.
Great.
So she did it. She just shaved her hair off. And she just talks about the fact, you know, she's had things to say with the music. She was a protest singer, and she said she couldn't be, she wasn't right for one side and she wasn't right for the other, and in the middle, you know. And she's totally intelligent and wanted to stand up for the theocracy and all the kids that were abused by their parents and the Catholic Church in Ireland. She said it was bloody awful growing up in Ireland at that time, and how the parents used to just, like, beat the kids, really, because the mothers weren't allowed to work once they got married. I mean, it was just a terrible, terrible time to be growing up. And half the people, she said, the children in Ireland suffered terribly under the Catholic Church at that time.
Ruled by men. And, I mean, exactly. You know, the first track from our new record, nothing to take anything away from what we're talking about here, but Saving Me is basically about organised religion and principally the Catholic Church. And how it's been responsible for such horror for so long and how upset we are about it. And, you know, and Sinead was obviously very upset because she ripped a picture of the Pope up, which actually destroyed her career, basically.
Well, no, not,
in
do you think?
The US. Well, that's what everybody says, you know.
Well, she said she ripped it up, and this is great because, you know, there's a lot of stuff you read, and I wanted to hear it from her own lips today, and that's why I spent a good hour this afternoon watching her interviews. And she was saying she ripped it up on Saturday Night Live. It wasn't just about the priests, and it was the abused kids. She was doing it for all the kids to actually get it out there. And apparently there was some sort of media thing that went on that they were going to, like, crushed some of her music outside the record company offices with a steamroller. And do you know what her response was? She said, around that time, she said, we all wanted a parental advisory sticker on the albums, you know, she said, and the only guys that would get it were the rappers at the time, because they were the real, you know, kick-ass naughty ones, as it were, naughty in inverted commas. So she said when there were only about 200 cassettes and there was nothing, it was just a failed publicity stunt.
Yeah.
And she said, you know what, That's one of my favourite photographs. That's like, for me, getting 20,000 parental advisory stickers for my music, you know, because she was talking about raising awareness. And this is the one thing that I do celebrate with her. And we just want to respect and love her tonight and say thank you, Sinead, for the beautiful music. And, you know, no, I don't know. I don't know her music that well, but I know who she is. And now I know her a bit better. And it doesn't stop me from going and finding out more about her music and stuff, you know. I mean, also, I just wanted to mention as well that she did change her name. So she still went by Sinead for her music, but her name is Shuhada Sadakat, and previously before that, Magda David. So Shuhada, we love you. Rest, sleep peacefully. Beautiful, beautiful soul.
Same blues as everyone, so try and call me. I'm a mobile man. Yes, I am.
Supertones show, and that was Gomez, G get myself arrested. The first single release from the Mercury Music Prize Award winning, not nominated, winning debut album, Bring It On, released on the 13th of April 1998 on Hut Records again.
Yeah, I know.
So Hut are everywhere. I think they were a sub-label of
Virgin.
Well, you've been doing your radio.
I was going to catch you out then.
Yeah. Well, anyway, yeah, and they're from Southport, and that is the reason why we're featuring them. They are a cool band. Of course, I went to school near Southport. I've got a lot of friends in Southport, Ralph Hilton, who's a good old buddy of mine. He lives there. He's a surveyor, I think. And then Tim Wright, of course, who was a singer in our band, lives very close to Southport. So I know an awful lot about Southport. But even Southport is in Merseyside, and they hate being in Merseyside. They want to be in Lancashire, yeah. So that's why I've put these guys in. But I remember when this came out, and it was such a great, refreshing album. And basically, it's a blues record. And when you listen to people talking about them, they say they're a great blues band, and they are. But it's confusion. And I love that. He only grows for people he knows, you know, which is fantastic, you know, really, really good. Lovely lyric. And I've never met the guys, but they seem a really cool band. They did very well. They've done very well.
They have, haven't they? I've never actually heard that before. In fact, I don't really know Gomez at all. So it's been quite eye-opening. In fact, I really like it. Really, really like it.
Yeah.
It feels fresh and fun. And, and a little bit naughty, which is great. I like that.
But it sounds chaotic to me because it keeps stopping. And that guy, because there's four singers in the band, I think. But that guy, he's got a really great voice and he keeps sort of coming. He sounds a bit pissed. And, but just really, really cool. And I mean, they've done amazing things because in 1998, Philips Electronics chose Gomez to cover the Beatles song Getting Better for a 100 million ad campaign for Philips new lines of flat panel and high definition TVs. So
that's a bit of Wonga in the old bank, isn't it?
Kachingo,
really?
Kachingo, yeah. Kachingo. Thank you.
Well, it's funny. I really wish. Anyway, the thing is now, I know about Gomez. And because I guess it's a blokey thing, you know, a little bit blokey. It is a bit blokey. But I like blokey music now, as you can probably guess.
You're definitely getting into it.
I am. What was lovely about the origins of this band, though, which is a great story, they started off recording demos and it turned into a bit of a record company circus. Now, don't you just dream about that.
Yeah.
That's what you want. You want to do your demo. And then one minute they were talking to a small label in Sheffield through their manager at the time, Stephen Fellows. He knew somebody in the record industry, so he passed on the tape, got around, and then all these big companies like Island Virgin and EMI, there was a bidding war for them. Absolutely crazy. So they eventually signed to Hut and went into Park Street Studios in Liverpool.
Which we know very well.
Yeah, we've been in there. Filming in there.
We have.
So with engineer Ken Nelson, who later worked with Badly Drawn Boy and Coldplay. Well, of course, Coldplay were there because I remember Chris showing us, who's this is the piano.
Yeah, the piano. Yeah.
Not Chris from Coldplay.
I'm not sure whether it is, you know, because Rockfield, they actually said that they wrote that.
Exactly.
Rockfield. So there's a bit of confusion.
Yeah, which
about
song
it.
And yeah. Which piano?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
So
the interesting thing about this Mercury winning album, though, is that the other nominees that year, are you ready for this, were Massive Attack, Mezzanine, Pulp, This Is Hardcore, and The Verve with Erden Hems, and they didn't win.
Christian Madden and the Enemy Chorus. And that's All Five Chambers, the lead single from his studio album, The Extra Weight, released on Friendly Records on August the 24th this year.
Christian's from Burnley, not far from the Blacko, where we're playing at Hamish's on
13th of October.
Indeed, it's going to be an acoustic sort of unplugged type of gig with Susie, myself and Ugu on drums or cajon or whatever. But back to Christian. And I've known him man and boy because he's been part of my musical life ever since I did my first couple of solo records, 36. He was all over that and he played on the knife as well. But he's sort of grown in terms of his popularity and stuff. But he was a founding member of the Earlies as well. So,
yeah.
You know, I met him when he was like very young. And then he went and did the Earlies, which was quite a successful band all over the world. Really, they did very well.
Well, also, a lot of the Earlies were in Salford when I was there. There was Tom Knott, who was on trumpet. So it's like, and there's a couple of other people as well. It's just like, it was around that time the bands like were, you know, just popping out of the... popping
ether,
out things, yeah.
Well, of course, and Nicky, I think he probably produced that. Nicky Madden, his brother, who plays
sax, yeah.
Right, he plays horns, he plays all sorts of horns and stuff. You know, but it's a great little team. And his dad had a band called the Uptown Band in Burnley, which was very, very successful. And they played everywhere. They're like, he's a bit of a legend, his dad, you know.
I know, I remember he came to see us play at the Met last year.
Yeah,
well, the last time we were playing.
Rehearsals and stuff. He's cool. But this track, this album, I should say, features a lot of the Liam Gallagher band. Well, two of them anyway. Dan McDonald and Drew McConnell, and of course his brothers on sax, Nathan Sudders on bass, Ben Redfern on guitars, and Richard Young from the Earlies on drums. And it's a really interesting track. I haven't heard the full album yet because he hasn't bothered to send it to me, which is very remiss of him. I'm going to have to speak to him. But of course we're going to be seeing him because he's playing with us on the 14th of October at Coolham.
Yeah, the last night of our tour.
Yeah,
Christian's joining us for that final night.
Which is already sold out.
It is. It's sold out for our tour, so it's so exciting.
And it's the only night that we're doing a quartet, because the rest of the time we're doing a trio, but they specifically wanted a keyboard player, and we thought, well, there's only one man.
One man for the job.
One man for the job. Yeah, so, you know, but he's also a clever lad. He went to the London School of Economics, and he's very troublesome because he's clever and very, what's the word, mischievous with his intelligence. So we've had some tremendous rows. And I remember when Steve Gibson, our drummer from the UK, who's worked with us forever until this particular record, he thought we were having a real ding-dong argument. And I said, well, just normal, as I said. Because we're actually, this is a heated discussion about politics. But, you know.
Well, we call him Christian Devil's Advocate, Madden, because he doesn't always believe what he's saying. He just likes to discuss things and look at either side of the coin, doesn't he? We know this now. But it's been a joy. I mean, I didn't realise until I looked at his discography. He's played with King Creosote, Micah B. Hinson, I Am Clute, Cherry Ghost, and Paul Heaton, Dawn Landis, Sarah Lowe's, loads of people.
Yeah, he's a top session guy.
And that's the end of the show. So tonight we got a special song for you from Simon Campbell's first solo album, because he's from Lancashire, 36, and it's called Misgivings.
Yeah, it's recorded at the Met in Bury. We're going to be playing on this tour, of course. But don't forget, you can pre-order the tickets for the gigs at starlight-campbell.com, and also the 180-gram Milky Clear vinyl, CD, and downloads from Bandcamp are also available. So pick them up quick.
And this is Misgivings from the album Starlight Campbell Band Live.
The sun still kept shining before the rain moved in. It was late in September, just before the fall. My mama packed me a suitcase and left it out in the hall. I didn't know what I was doing.
met you, life has been a turbulent thing. I come back from my mama's place into a relationship thing. Every day is a circus. I really give you credit for that. Complimentary they call up, but I'm not so sure about that. I didn't know what I was doing. We were rocking and rolling all over the place. Standing right there with that look on your face. Starting in black, going into the light. And I think I have had my misgivings. Mr. Johnny Henderson, come on. We'll be right back.
Johnny Henson.